briefly, but I would ask judiciary staff to come forward and quickly go through the bill and the amendments.
Mr. Sanford, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Shields and members of the subcommittee. My name is Darian Stanford, and I'm counsel to the Senate and House Judiciary Committees this session. On House Bill 2740, what I'll address is the Dash 13 amendments that should be in front of you. And as succinctly as possible, what the bill does is it sets forth basically three different crimes. In one case, a new crime. The other two are modifications of existing crimes. First is the new crime of aggravated vehicular homicide, which is a Class A felony. Put simply, this is a situation where a drunk driver or driver under the influence kills someone, and in the past, the person did the same thing. That's as short as possible. The more precise legal way to say that is the person has a previous conviction for manslaughter in the first degree, manslaughter in the second degree, or what's known as criminally negligent homicide, and that prior crime involved intoxicants and a motor vehicle. There would be, in these situations, where the person then does it a second time, a mandatory minimum of 240 months. And with the Dash 13 amendment, there is an affirmative defense that is built in for a defendant to argue that in the past, when this happened, alcohol was not involved or intoxicants were not involved. Perhaps it was like a street racing or some kind of an auto accident where alcohol was not involved or intoxicants weren't involved. If so, then they would not fall under this aggravated vehicular homicide statute. That's the first of the three to discuss. The second is a modification of manslaughter in the first degree. And that is also like aggravated vehicular homicide. It's a Class A felony. What House Bill 2740 does with manslaughter in the first degree is it adds a new section, and this section applies, where a driver under the influence or a drunk driver kills someone, and previously the person has already driven under the influence and seriously hurt someone. Didn't kill him the first time, or the previous time, but very seriously hurt them. More precisely, again, the way it's phrased is the person has killed somebody on the new occasion, and in the past, they have a previous conviction for assault in the first degree, assault in the second degree, or assault in the third degree, and that the assault conviction involved alcohol in a vehicle, or intoxicants in a vehicle, I should say. Or the other way that you can fall within this manslaughter in the first degree is if your prior is three felony due, or the correct way to say it is that this is a felony Dewey. Oregon law, in terms of making somebody guilty of felony Dewey, is you already have three Deweys within the past 10 years. This is your fourth. So the other way that you can fall within this manslaughter one provision is if this new Dewey, where you kill someone, is your fourth Dewey within the past 10 years. And so under either of those circumstances, where it's your felony Dewey or you've previously seriously hurt someone, you would then be guilty of the crime of manslaughter in the first degree, which is a mandatory minimum of 120 months on the sentencing grid. And again, there is an affirmative defense for a defendant in situations where the prior accident did not involve intoxicants, and the defendant then could show that. And this is a significant change from the prior version of the bill. The prior version of the bill had these offenses, assault, first, second, third degree, and felony Dewey, in the 240-month mandatory minimum as a result of compromise discussed between the parties, where the earlier accident just resulted in serious physical injury but short of death, it's now been taken in half to 120 months. So that was one of the major changes from the old bill to the new bill. The last piece of the bill that I should make the committee aware of is the modification to the existing Class A felony of assault in the first degree. And this is for the situation where what happens is a drunk driver causes serious physical injury to somebody. And in the past, that drunk driver has either killed or seriously physically injured somebody before, and it would have involved a motor vehicle and alcohol. So basically, it's you don't kill somebody, but you seriously injure them, and in the past, you have done the same thing. The more technical way is you've been convicted of either manslaughter one or two, criminally negligent homicide, assault first, second, or third degree, or this is your felony Dewey. So all those crimes that I talked about before, all of them count here. If you have a prior for that, it involved intoxicants in a vehicle, and then you in the present cause serious physical injury to somebody, you would be guilty now of the crime of assault one, and that's a mandatory minimum of 90 months under the existing grid. Same affirmative defense is available in terms of, hey, in my past, there were no intoxicants involved. So that's a relatively succinct summary of the bill. If anybody has any questions, I'm happy to try to respond.
Nice job, Terry.
Thank you.
Representative Cameron.
And the minimum sentence for the last...
90 months.
Thank you.
Questions for Mr. Stanford?
Unless there are questions, I will draw your attention to the back side of the staff notes summary, which is on the bill itself, is the fiscal impact statement. There is no fiscal in either 0709 or 0911 because of the length of sentences and prior, they would have been prior or convicted anyways. It does have some impact, but a number of years out, and it peaks, I believe, at around $400,000 in 2028. This is much less than the version of the bill that had been around earlier in terms of the fiscal impact.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. Questions? Mr. Stanford, you might want to wait until we get done with the work session, if you don't mind.
Sure.
So why don't we take a motion to move the dash 13s.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the dash A13s into... Into Ayn Rost House Bill 270.
Representative
27-40. Sorry.
Representative Cameron has moved the dash A13s into House Bill 2740. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Just moving the amendments in. And then could I get a motion to move the bill to full Ways and Means?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2740 as amended to the full Ways and Means.
With a due pass recommendation.
With a due pass recommendation.
Representative Barker has moved House Bill 2740A as amended to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair, these are my constituents who brought us this bill, and this bill is very similar to one that died in the last days of last session. And I want to compliment all the parties who participated yesterday in a final negotiation to get this narrowed down to a point where it would deal with the worst of the worst, but not expand out some of these very, very long sentences to a degree that we just can't afford, frankly, to do in our criminal justice system. We had the criminal defense bar. We had the prosecutors. In fact, Representative Barker's daughter, Heidi, was there for them. And Mr. Dole and Representative Barker and myself, and I feel very comfortable with the result that we achieved, and I want to thank all sides for their hard work on this.
Thanks, Senator.
In a very short time.
Further discussion? Before we go into vote count, I just wanted to make some comments explaining my vote as well. I think good policy is about compromise and meeting competing views halfway where possible. And Senator Burdick, Representative Barker put in a lot of work, as did the other parties yesterday, trying to come up with a way that this could get through both houses. And I'll be voting yes on it, which is a jump for me, as some of you might appreciate, because I do have concerns with mandatory minimum sentencing. Not that I have a problem with defining a term of sentence for an offender or for holding offenders accountable. As someone who in my profession looked into the eyes of sociopaths for a living, I know what they're capable of, and how you have to create borders of accountability for their actions. But my concern with mandatory sentencing is that it takes a lot of the discretion and power away from the judges and puts it into the prosecutor's hands, and you end up, I think what will probably happen in the rare cases that do come forward is they'll get pled down to lesser offenses, and people will have less ability to have their day in court. So I wanted to explain my views on the record, but again, I particularly thank Senator Burdick and Representative Barker for working to get people together and get a bill going that everybody can be supportive of, and that will be a yes vote. Are there any other comments, or we'll go into objections? Any objections? So moved. House Bill 2740 will go to the Ways and Means.
Carriers.
Let's
carry it on the floor.
Yeah, Representative Hanna can carry it in full Ways and Means. And then on the Senate side, Senator Burdick, I think, would be appropriate. Again, nice work, Senator Burdick. Thank you for your diligence on this.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. You had a role in this as well, and I appreciate it very much.
And thank you for your diligence in coming back with this bill. I will close a work session on House Bill 2740, and I will open a work session on Senate Bill 1.
Chair, the materials are being passed out. Senate Bill 1 was in front of you for a public hearing, I believe, on Saturday. There is a memo within the in the packet that's coming around. And it is a rather short bill. This bill sets up, or actually provides the funding for the staff that will be developing the seismic rehabilitation grants that are and the eligible parties to receive those grants are school buildings and certain public safety buildings. You have the bill in front of you. I will have one amendment. Which is at the bottom of my memo, and I have talked to the agency about this, and they tend to be in agreement with it, as Mr. Murphy shakes his head. And so that amendment is changing the appropriation on the first page, the only page of the bill, line 6, and that number, instead of being the 616,860, would be 433,560. And that provides 4 staff people for a portion of the biennium. I must remind the committee or the subcommittee again that at this time there is no funding for the grants themselves. This will establish the grant program or get it up so it's ready to go when the funding is available. There is, the Constitution allows for bonding for these, but there at this time there's no debt service. My guess is that this will be revisited within the next year, hopefully, in terms of what to do in terms of once the grant program is ready to go forward. So, Mr. Chair, that's my introduction.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. So we just have the bill.
The bill and a simple amendment, which is outlined at the bottom of my, in bold in my memo.
Are you looking for a motion, Mr. Chair?
I believe so, if you know what that motion should be, Senator Wesley.
Mr. Chair, I move we amend Senate Bill 1 as outlined in bullet point enumerated number 4 in the LFO memorandum dated June 21st, 2007 regarding seismic rehabilitation grants, that line 6 of the Senate Bill 1 be amended to read $433,560 be inserted and take out $616,860. I know that was wordy, but I believe that gets us the way we want.
I wish you were in my Transportation and Economic Development Committee just an hour ago. Does that suffice?
Yeah.
Representative Nicholson.
But Mr. Chair, I've been in other subcommittee meetings where the chair repeated the motion.
Yeah, exactly.
It was so well said.
I think that's the vice chair's job.
Wait, I am a vice chair.
So, Senator Westland has a motion on the table. Is there any objection?
We lack a quorum.
Oh, and now there's a call of the House.
Well, let's get this one done.
Is there objection? Seeing none, don't go anywhere yet. And then we're going to.
And Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 1 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Westland has moved Senate Bill 1 to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any objection? So moved. Carrier on the in full. Senator Westland, would you take care of that? And on the House, Representative Nathanson, you're up.
Peter Courtney should carry this on the Senate floor.
Yeah, I guess so.
Nathan.
We will, there's a call to the House, so we will be back as soon as we can. The Public Safety Subcommittee, Joint Committee on Ways and Means, and I will open a work session on House Bill 3273.
Chair Shields, members of the committee, House Bill 3273 would allow Waymaster or motor carrier enforcement officers to use warning lights or other signals for purpose of stopping driver of commercial motor vehicle. You also have a dash one amendment in your packet. You also have the fiscal impact statement. There is a fiscal impact. And I want to explain a little bit the effects of the Dash 1 amendment. The Dash 1 amendment makes it more explicit that ODOT needs to provide training to these individuals. And with discussions with ODOT and the co-chairs, that we'd like to pilot this project before we roll it out on a full statewide basis. There are some LFO has some concerns, especially with respect to safety issues surrounding this. Pulling over large commercial vehicles on a high-speed interstate poses certain safety risks, and we have to be very careful and make sure that there at least people are trained. They also need to be trained in dealing with potentially violent or belligerent individuals. So there are some very serious concerns that we have about extending this authority. What this bill essentially does is it makes it more explicit that they have this ability to pull over commercial vehicles. They used to do this as a course of practice, but through a couple of incidents and an opinion from the Department of Justice, ODOT discontinued the practice of having motor carrier enforcement officers or waymasters pull over commercial vehicles. I believe that the current practice is if they see a violation of some sort, they may go out and track that vehicle, and then they will radio or contact the state police, and the state police will actually pull over the vehicle and go through the process with the driver.
Sounds like we need a scope of practice board. Sorry.
He's still laughing.
As I said earlier, ODOT anticipates training 20 MCEOs, or motor carrier enforcement officers, at a time. We will run a pilot project for the first year, train them up, we'll run the process, then ODOT will get together and look at the lessons learned and what came out of the practice in the first year before we continue to roll it out. They've had discussions with DPSSP about structuring a training course specifically for these types of activities. Those would include emergency vehicle operations, legal classes on enforcing the motor vehicle code, and you know how you might pull somebody over and how you might have conversation with them. And there would also be, I believe, there might be some self-defense type of activities also. Another issue that we have is that DPSST is currently at or near capacity with both working on the vehicle course and classroom and instructor time. So if we are to train up a large number of these motor carrier enforcement officers, we're going to have some conversations with DPSST about the capacity issues and how we're able to do that. And if that's the case, I would anticipate that DPSST would be coming back to the legislature or an emergency board to request additional limitation if they needed it.
Thank you very much, Mr. Walker. Before we go into motions, I assume there'll be some discussion about this bill. Anyone?
Have a question.
Yes, Representative Bennett.
Thank you, and this could be for professional staff. When we talk about training, you talk about both training for, you know, possible belligerent behavior, the possibility of training for how to pull a large vehicle over on a highway or interstate. I see in line 14, item F under section 1, violation of posted speed limits on use of road. So what about training? I mean, will that be through the use of PACE or radar or laser or what?
Chair Shields, Representative Hanna, first of all, that's going to be dictated by how their car is equipped. I would be surprised if they would be equipped with a radar or laser, so it would have to be through pacing if they are pulling over someone. Typically, the motor carrier enforcement officer or waymaster would only have the powers of a police officer under ORS 810-490, which allows them to only enforce the weights and measures provisions of the Motor Vehicle Code.
Follow up.
Am
I misreading this, though, that line 14, item F, would be one of the subsection applies to the following offenses? Do I misunderstand that?
No, I believe that's a correct reading of that, and I would anticipate that if they are, excuse me, Chair Shields, Representative Hanna, that if they are in pursuit of a commercial vehicle that is speeding, that they would have the authority through cite for speeding. But I would prefer to rely on legal counsel to confirm that. But I
follow up then. Do we have legal counsel to answer that question?
Chair Shields, Representative Hanna, it would appear that we have plenty of legal counsel in the audience, but whether they're prepared to answer that question.
And I'd like to follow up, please.
Yeah, Representative Hanna, I wouldn't feel comfortable bringing LC in, but if you wanted to get some more comments on the record, that's
okay.
Fine.
I mean, my question, I guess, applies to the training piece. I mean, you mentioned specifics in training, but I didn't hear training about speed violations. And in the fiscal, I don't know that we've seen a fiscal that addresses speed monitoring equipment in these vehicles. Have we?
Chair Shields, Representative Hanna, we do not have specifics about how the vehicles would be outfitted. My understanding is that they would be very close to the vehicles that the state police uses. And one of the issues around that is when DPSST provides certification for emergency vehicle operation, they're in particular vehicles. So they would be trained in, for example, the state police Dodge Charger they're using. But DPSST would then have problems certifying them if they're going out and driving a Dodge Aries K in pursuit. So I believe that they would be outfitted very similar to what the state police are using, either the Ford Interceptor or pursuit vehicle or the Dodge Charger.
Representative Penn.
Thank you. It just appears to me that when you begin to look at the list of items, this looks more and more like a OSP officer. I think the training that we provide for OSP is 16 weeks of basic and 5 or 6 weeks additional training. But these folks we're going to put out there with at least a number of like performance issues with 3 weeks of training.
Chair Shields, Representative Anna, at this point, yes.
Thank you. Mr. Chair.
Senator Westland.
If I may, I mean, I understand Representative Hanna's point, but, I mean, you go down this list, and I see the preponderance of these potential offenses as something I would think are very specific to waymasters or, quote, enforcement officers. And certainly there is the item 14, violation of the posted limits. I think we have to turn this into, you know, are these individuals as capable or as equipped as regular OSP officers? I mean, if you see a semi barreling, you know, at 80 miles an hour through a 35 mile an hour zone, you know the guy's speeding. So I don't see that this does, you know, cause that great of A, fiscal, or B, you know, stretches the imagination or credulity to think these guys aren't capable of knowing when someone's speeding at certain times.
Thank you, Senator Westland. And Mr. Walker, my understanding is this is something that had been in effect up until 2004, where waymasters, by statute, had the capability of doing that. This, and then a legal opinion by DOJ suggested that they didn't have the statutory authority, and this would actually bring the statutes up to date to, again, reinstate this. Is that your understanding?
Chair Shields, I believe that is correct. I'm not sure about the 2004 as far as when they discontinued this practice, but I do know it was linked to a Department of Justice legal opinion.
Yeah, it was on the staff measure summary from transportation where this bill was vetted previously, although part of the changes to the bill is in the training, obviously, too, and that will make it more affordable for the state. Representative Barker.
It just seemed to me that looking at this with a pilot program, that this might be a good chance. Limited number of people that's going to be trained, closely watched. 1 year, they'll come back and be able to show us how much revenue they're actually gathering, because people do go around those scale houses when they're open, and chicken coops, as they call them. And I think this might be a real asset for the state. So if we could get some people trained up and see how it works, if it's not working after a year, then we could discontinue it. But I know waymasters in the past have done that. I remember seeing one where we had a stop sign on the stick, and, you know, the stop trucks would have. This would be much better than that. So that was a long time ago. But
further discussion? Senator Westland.
Question perhaps of staff. Do we know where this pilot's going to be located?
Chair Shields, Senator Westland, at this point, no. I don't think we have identified a port of entry that they would start with. I would, I'm a little hesitant, but I would guess that it would probably be somewhere close to this area, perhaps the Hubbard port of entry, but that is in the discretion of ODOT to make that decision.
So it's not limited geographically by the bill. And I think that's a proper way to craft this bill, because if we've got 20, is it, enforcement officers? Okay. I think there's different types of, you know, highways, highway usage, and certainly truck traffic environments in this state. Certainly Portland is one of those where they don't even have any scales. I mean, you're on I-5, and the first scale that you hit coming south is Woodburn, and heaven knows how much, you know, overweight and truck violation goes on in the Portland area from Seattle trucks coming into town or right back out. And then I would think Woodburn itself would be an excellent place to put these because it's a very good rural metro mix. You've not only got the freeway there, but lots of farm and lots of agricultural areas going on. And then certainly if you want a pure freeway environment, maybe major traffic corridors, Cascade locks east along 84 and then down 97 to Madras. I've had personal experience with some of the folks out in Sherman County where they have no truck enforcement whatsoever, as they don't in Portland anymore either have their truck enforcement team. So I don't know. The bill is specific or not specific. I think that's a very good thing, but I, for one, as a committee member, would recommend Portland area, Woodburn area, and certainly the 84-97 corridor.
So noted for the record. I think so that we can get back up to the floor, I'm going to move the discussion along and ask for a motion on the dash.
I'll move the dash one amendments, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the discussion. I think it's really appropriate for a policy committee. The last recollection I had is this is a fiscal committee, and we should be focused on the fiscal concerns.
Senator Brown has moved the dash one amendments into House Bill 3273. Objections? Representative Hanna and Senator Nelson. Dash ones are adopted. A motion to move it to the full Ways and Means.
I'll move it to the full as amended. Pass recommendation, Mr. Chair.
Senator Brown moves House Bill 3273 as amended with the dash one amendments to the full Ways and Means full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Are there any objections, discussion? Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to appease Senator Brown's need for financial information, I'd like to set the record straight that the Motor Carrier Division intends to send 20 employees at a time, not just 20, but 20 employees at a time at a cost of $2,800 per person. And in addition, there would be annual in-service or refresher training required that we do not have a cost for. The training cost for the first 20 employees is $56,000 and an additional $35,000 for equipment. So if one were to multiply that out times the groups of 20, you might be able to come up with the total cost for adding this. Further, I would say if the committee is committed to public safety for $4.2 million, we could add 39 new Oregon State Police troopers to our current force and training and accommodate much of what has been discussed. I'll be a no vote.
Very good. Further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Cameron.
Yeah, I just, and I know this is not policy committee, but 825-300 talks about enforcement for the Oregon Vehicle Code when it comes to the motor vehicle codes, and it says that the department and the state police shall cooperate in enforcement of this chapter to the end that there may be no duplication of services or expense. And I'm concerned about some of the things that are listed in here, obviously, and would like to know if this is an experiment, how are we going to come back and supply some measurement criteria to see if this is working and how those duplications are being overlapped or not overlapped. So I don't see anything in this bill that allows us to come back and look at it or the measurement criteria for that.
Thank you, Representative Cameron. No, that's okay. Or did you need to respond to Representative Cameron? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay, please.
Chair Shields, Representative Cameron, there is a sunset provision in the bill. The bill sunsets in January 2nd of 2013, and we've also requested that ODOT come back to the Legislative Assembly and report on the progress and any lessons learned or any changes that need to be made to the program in the next Legislative Assembly. So we do have some touch points with this, and we're not going to cut it loose.
All right. Further discussion or objections?
Further discussion.
Okay, Representative Hanna.
Because professional staff has brought up the idea about progress, the full-time equivalent positions added in transportation are what?
Chair Shields, Representative Hannah, there are no added FTE or positions in ODOT for this program. These are current positions that exist within Motor Carrier, and they will just be trained for this additional duty. ODOT has not requested any additional position authority.
Thank you. Follow-up? Will there be reclassifications then of those positions?
Chair Shields, Representative Hannah, I do not know if reclassifications are contemplated. I would have to defer to ODOT to answer that question.
Thank you.
Objections. Senator Nelson, Representative Hannah, Representative Cameron. We are yes, so moved. And carriers for the House in poll, Representative Nathanson. I think you did an excellent job carrying this bill. And on the Senate side,
yeah. I'll turn it on to Carmel.
It can be anyone. Oh, Senator Wesley. Okay.
That's good.
Thank you, Senator. And I will close the work session on House Bill 3273.
Okay.
And I will open a work session on Senate Bill 111.
Mr. Chair, this is the Use of Force Bill brought to you by, introduced on the behalf of the Attorney General. Senator Gordley has also had a lot to do with this bill, this biennium, and the last session. What this bill does, when you have a packet being passed out, there's also an amendment being passed out. This bill requires that a planning authority in each county prepare a plan outlining the use of deadly force by police. Police is defined in the bill, but it's generally law enforcement officers. The membership of the planning authorities are laid out. It's generally district attorney, sheriff, non-management police officers, non-management, non-law enforcement members of the public, and someone representing the state police from the community. It also directs what needs to be part of the plan. It sets up approval policy or process within the county, and also sets that the Attorney General will review and provide final approval on the plan, provides a mechanism for challenging the plan. It also provides funding to pay to local governments for the costs of preparing or amending and implementing the plan, and it does say that if there's insufficient funding, that the specific actions don't necessarily have to be followed in terms of some of the items in the plan. Other components of the bill includes that the DA must present facts to grand jury regarding use of deadly force. It requires recording of the grand jury proceedings into the use of deadly force by officer. That's addressed in the amendment we'll talk about in a second. And it also provides procedure to determine whether all or a portion of the grand jury transcripts should be sealed or made public. We do have an amendment in front of you that was brought to me today. And, of course, I gave the only copy I have. Thank you. What this amendment does, really two basic things. On the bottom of page 2 of the bill, page 2, it deletes line 44 and 45, which is a requirement that the planning authority submitted the plan to the local public safety coordinating council, the county, for the council's review and comment. And the second thing it does is require, or it makes a permissive instead of a requirement, that the proceedings of the grand jury be recorded or transcribed. This was brought to me by Mr. Neely, representing the district attorneys. It was signed off by both the co-chairs, and I think any questions should probably be directed to him, or any questions of the bill at this stage be addressed to someone from the Department of Justice, including the Attorney General, who's here, or the deputy, for that matter.
Why don't we bring up Mr. Attorney General and Mr. Berry or Mr. Neely? Whoever you'd like. And it's critical to keep this brief, but I wanted to have them up as a resource. Does These amendments indicate that the District Attorneys Association is now supportive of the bill. Is that correct?
Chair Shields and members of the committee, as you know, the DA's Association has had concerns in the past about this bill. And with the A4 amendments, we have agreed to go neutral on it.
Neutral, okay. But there were several individual district attorneys who were supportive of the bill themselves. My understanding is Mike Strunk in Multnomah County, John Foote in Clackamas County, and Mike Dugan in Deschutes County.
Chair Shields, that's correct.
Thank you very much. And Representative Cameron.
Yeah, is there a fiscal to this?
Mr. Chair, there's no fiscal. There is an appropriation line on page 11. And LFO has a suggested recommendation to change that depending on whether you pass the dash A4s that are also in front of you. I have two different numbers that I'll provide after the action on the A4 amendments are done. There's also a potential fiscal to DPSST, but in conversations with the agency, they did not think that they would have a fiscal because I think it's section 23 requires DPSST to complete development of the training program as required by an existing statute. They felt that they had that in place or in the way of putting that into place, and they would not necessarily have any additional financial requirements.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Brown.
I would move the dash A four amendments, and I just want to confirm that the Attorney General is satisfied with the dash A fours.
Mr. Chair, Senator Brown, yes.
Thank you.
Senator Brown has moved the dash four amendments to Senate Bill 111A. Objections? Representative Hanna, Representative Cameron, and Senator Nelson.
Chair,
why don't we make the motion? People can discuss their objections if they have them. Senator Westland.
Do we need some fiscal information now that we move?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I have another amendment, which is a fiscal amendment on page 11. I have this draft, but I had to change the number. On page line 7, page 11, this is section 21. The bill presently appropriates $300,000 general fund. And LFO's recommendation with the passage of the A4s is that that number be reduced to $221,361. The difference is that part of the grants that would have been paid out to local jurisdictions were for the transcribing costs, and the department estimates that the amount they need is reduced by that amount. So again, on page 11, line 7, instead of $300,000, it'll be $221,361.
Mr. Chair, I move that on page 11, line 7, we delete the figure of $300,000 and insert $221,361.
Senator Westland has moved that on page 11 of the A and Gross version of Senate Bill 111, we turn $300,000 to $221,361. Objection to that motion, Senator Nelson, Representative Hanna, and Representative Cameron. It's good. Motion.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 111 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. I move Senate Bill 111 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Westland has moved Senate Bill 111 as amended to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Representative Hanna?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I find this bill to be duplicative of multiple processes. One, through the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. Two, through the local public safety coordinating councils. Most, if not every bit of what is being mentioned here is done at that level currently. I'll be a no vote.
Senator Brown?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank the Attorney General. He's been working on this issue for a long period of time. He convened a Deadly Force Task Force in 2004. It was an extremely diverse statewide task force with a number of committees. They met for several months, introduced legislation last session after extensive community hearings. There is also a 46-page report if folks need more information on the subject. The bill last session, despite extensive compromise and consensus, was not passed.
I just really appreciate the Attorney General's work on this critically important issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. And I would like to also underline that in these amendments, which are compromise amendments to bring the district attorneys to neutral, that it makes making public the grand jury proceedings permissive, that the district attorney will still have an option to do that. It's not mandated, which it's my understanding makes the district attorneys much more comfortable with the bill. Senator Nelson.
I'll be opposed to this because I hear my four counties out there saying we have to do what? This is, to me, it talks about now the $200,000 to cover a portion of the cost of developing the plan. That guy's out there laying people off. I mean, how can I support something that is maybe Representative Hannah has always said is we have to put some trust in the local communities doing the job. And you know, if this is a problem in the bigger cities, that's fine. But I just don't see it as a problem in my part of the country, so I just can't support it.
Fair enough. Representative Cameron.
I'll be brief, but again, I've learned through this process in Ways and Means, and I have all respect for the senator about this isn't a policy committee, but this bill came from the Senate side, and this is the first time that it's been heard in any shape or form on the House side, and it would be better if we had a little more time to discuss the policy, and I'm sure it's been worked on it, and the Attorney General has worked on a lot of things, but I will be a no because there are some issues in this that have already been talked about.
Fair enough. Objections? Representative Hannah, Representative Cameron, and Senator Nelson. Senate Bill 111 is moved to the full committee of Ways and Means. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Attorney General, for your work on this. Carriers on the...
Senators Carter and Gordley on the floor, please.
Yes, and in full, Senator Wesley. And well, on Senator the Lee House side, I would be happy to carry it on the House side. All right, I will close the work session. Did I already do that? On Senate Bill 111 and open a work session on a federal grant application authority for the Oregon State Police for the Oregon Wireless Interoperability Network Project.
Mr. Chair, in front of you is something that became available to us just in the past couple of days. We want to make sure that the Oregon State Police and the Oregon Wireless Interoperability Project had the opportunity to apply for a $6 million grant from the U.S. Department of Justice through their community-oriented policing services, or COPS federal grant program. They plan to use this to purchase equipment, and it should offset the future cost of the OWIN project because it will be compatible. They'll use it to link infrastructure across the state, but generally from Bend, Portland, out to Pendleton, the link together some existing systems they have. They'll use it to replace 1960s technology. A lot of it will be microwave related, and the important thing here, at least on the fiscal side, is that it should offset OWIN costs in the future since this should be OWIN compatible. Mr. Chair, that is the 22nd description.
That's very good. I think we've all been wanting more grant support for OWIN, so this looks like this is an opportunity to do it. Are there any objections? Well, let's make it a motion, actually.
Mr. Chair, I move the request for approval to apply for a $6 million Community Orientation Policing Services federal grant to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Westland has moved this application be approved at the full Ways and Means. Is there any objection?
Just a question, just a discussion. There's 25% matching grant, and ODOT's going to pay that. Is that?
Mr. Chair, I failed to mention that, and I apologize. Yes, they will pay the 25%. They have set aside long-term $75 million for the OWIN project that's been approved by their board. We'll work that out as a contribution in the future in terms of...
Quarterly, $150,000.
if the full 100 or 600, 6 million, so it would actually be more than that.
1,250,000.
Yeah.
Oh, 1.25 million.
Would you like to discuss this for a little while?
$5 million.
Are there any objections? So moved. Let's see. Senator Westland, could you carry this also?
You better show up next time.
What do you mean?
The floor.
He doesn't have to use the Senate.
Show up next time.
And this meeting is adjourned.